The Space Between Failing and Falling. Written and narrated by Jocanda Sykes. Rating: Explicit. Summary: A very long time ago, Severus resigned himself to the reality that he doesn't have a soulmate after all. He's finally a real Defence Against the Dark Arts teacher, and his life is perfectly tolerable, thank you very much. However, at the age of 39, it seems his soulmate has come of age. He will ignore this new development and carry on as he always has. Chapter 1: Deficiency and Defeat. Severus stirs with a grunt. Light stabs him in the eye. His throat is aflame and his head pounds. As he stretches his fingers and toes, he feels crisp bedsheets. Someone force-feeds him a draught, and he is helpless but to yield to the blissful darkness. When he awakens, he discovers a potter snoring in a nearby chair. It seems he has died and gone to hell. On his fourth foray into consciousness, he disputes the potency of the antidote, the quality of blood-replenishing potion, and the quantity of painkillers. The next time he wakes up, he makes a healer cry. His heart is unmoved. On the sixth occasion, he self-discharges. He signs a parchment saying that he is returning home against medical advice, that professionals fear he will expire in his bed, and no doubt when someone notices there might be an investigation. And so they send him home with instructions on what potions to take and when, how to measure his blood pressure, honestly, and innumerable useless nonsense. Naturally, as he shuffles towards the fireplaces, Potter catches up with him. He is scarcely aware of the crowd staring at them. "Professor, you're up. You don't look well. Are they sure you should be going home? Mr. Potter," he begins. His rasp turns into a hacking cough. They are beside a poster emblazoned with the words, "A clean cauldron keeps potions from becoming poisons." Good Lord. When his coughing finally subsides, he is politer than planned and goes on to say, "This does not concern you." He takes the flue to a long-abandoned mill. He is profoundly glad he connected it to the network 20 years ago. It is raining in Cokeworth. His street is just as he remembered, an awful place. Upon entering his house, he is arrested. Grim-faced auras flank Severus and usher him into courtroom 13. They won't meet him in the eye. They were his students. The bowels of the ministry have not changed one bit. The walls, made of black stone, are dimly lit by torches. Wizards and witches are crammed into benches that rise on either side of him, some clutching quick-quotes quills and cameras. Ahead, on the highest bench of all, sit many shadowy figures. They wait in silence as he enters. His shuffling footsteps echo loudly on the flagstones. When he sits gingerly on one of the centre chairs, chains snake across his arms to bind him. Predictably, excited whispers fill the cavernous room. Before he closes his eyes, he sees 50 elderly Wizengamot purebloods peering down their noses at him.
"Severus Snape."
The not question comes from the familiar voice of Shacklebolt. There is no need to reply.
"Order, settle down, please. Let's get this over with."
A moment passes and some people shut up.
"Criminal justice hearing on the 17th of June,
Shacklebolt says in a booming voice.
"Into offences committed under the decree for the Unforgivable Curses, the Homicide Act, and the Reasonable Use of Force in Schools Act. These infractions were allegedly perpetrated by Severus Tobias Snape, resident at number 17 Spinner's End, Cokeworth, Merseyside. Interrogators: Kingsley Darius Shacklebolt, Minister for Magic. Gavin Rees-Robards, head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, Priyanka Banu Wallace, Senior Undersecretary to the Minister, Yangzi Chang, Court Scribe.
Witness for the defence, Harry James Potter," rings a voice from the chair beside his. He opens his eyes just in time to observe Potter pulling off that damned cloak. Such a show-off. Severus would look heavenward, but he doesn't want to bring on a headache, and so he lets his eyelids fall. There are more excited mutterings and camera flashbulbs. This trial shouldn't be going ahead. You've seen what you need to see. Mr. Potter, please calm yourself. Procedure must be followed. Can't you see he's unwell? Severus prays hard for reprieve. The momentous kiss, not guilty, anything, whichever is quicker. We must proceed. We have a lot to get through, so please remain silent, a woman says. Shacklebolt's voice calls out again.
The charges against the accused are as follows. That he did knowingly, deliberately, and in full awareness of the lawlessness of his actions, use the killing curse in the presence of schoolchildren on the 30th of June 1997 at 22 minutes past 11 on Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore. This constitutes an offence under paragraph A of the Homicide Act of 1857. In your position of headmaster at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, the heavy-handedness, accessory to murder, and treason all constitute...
At this, Severus leans forward, so that hair covers his face. He tunes them out as though he is surrounded by buzzing flies. Potter shakes his shoulder. Professor, are you all right? You don't look well. They're asking you things now. You are Severus Tobias Snape of Number 17 Spinner's End? He clears his throat.
Evidently.
Did you cast the killing curse on Albus Dumbledore?
Yes.
Let this end.
In the knowledge that this is an unforgivable curse?
In my capacity as the defence against the dark arts, Professor.
Speak up, please.
Yes.
Some of the Wizengamotter muttering. This goads Potter into speech. This is ridiculous. Do we have to go through this? Severus's ears buzz. I could be wrong, Potter says, but I'm sure that under the Wizengamot Charter of Rights, the accused has the right to be in reasonable health in their hearing and to present witnesses for their case, so when do I get to speak? There is a sigh.
Go along then, Harry.
I submitted the evidence ages ago. There's just no way you can convict Professor Snape.
The pain-killing potions he drank before entering the courtroom hit him.
A sense of preternatural calm pervades his mind, and it grips his body in numbness. The tinny voices sound as though they are coming from a distant wireless, and he can barely keep his head up. He must have nodded off because a healer pulls him up by the elbow and escorts him to the flu network. He is not bound in chains. A cat scratches at the door. When Severus notices the tabby, he says, "For Merlin's sake." He looks up and down the street. In. The front door opens directly into his parlour. There is no higher pleasure than a room covered in books. Simply breathing in helps to restore his equilibrium. He gives her a few seconds of privacy to transform before turning. Minerva wears an emerald travelling cloak, her hair is in a severe bun, and there is an unfathomable expression on her face.
"Make it quick," he says.
"That is no way to greet an old colleague."
"Your voice is giving me a headache."
Minerva sits herself down in his armchair and gives a look of alarm at his pain-killing potions on the spindly table. He simply stands and folds his arms. She staples her fingers as if considering what to do with him. It is most unsettling.
"I won't beat around the bush then," she says. "I'm here to ask you to return to Hogwarts."
"No."
"You haven't returned my letters?"
"I haven't read them," he says.
"If that will be all..."
"No, that will not be all."
Minerva purses her lips. He loves winding her up.
"I wrote and apologised. I would appreciate it if you accepted my apology."
She makes the bold assumption he has and smiles at him. It appears she knows him rather well.
"So, what are you doing for a living?"
"Breathing out my final days in Muggle Utopia as a bachelor of leisure."
"Don't be obtuse. You know full well what I mean."
"You are my ex-colleague, not my mother. I do not have to answer to you."
Minerva stands. "I can see that you're upset. I shall come back when you're in a better mood." He refuses to be rude and so allows her to leave without another word. The sorting hat says its part. A new batch of minuscule first years turn up, and they expect him to train an eighth year as a bonus to his already significant workload.
It is a sad state of affairs that Slytherin House does not need to be expanded to accommodate the 8th years. Teaching begins today, and he has fresh pupils to intimidate. His potions colleague seems tolerable, and Hogwarts is forever the same. "How are you feeling this morning, dear?" his gran asks. She hangs in the sitting room of his quarters, liberated from the Prince Vault in a fit of sentimentality. He starts to regret the social imposition. "Fine, thank you." He rubs the numbing salve over his throat in preparation for breakfast. He relishes living alone. For instance, no dirty socks litter the floor. Nobody stole his bedsheets last night. It is impossible for him to catch a venereal disease. He has no one to squabble with over which section of the Prophet to read. Furthermore, there are no grubby fingers on his very good plus graded record collection. He is definitely not lonely. "I am fine," he repeats. "Of course you are." She sniffs and adjusts the lace of a high-necked robe. "Good day to you."
"Good day."
It is certainly not because of this conversation with his grandmother that he invites Minerva, Aurora and Bjorn Nielsen, the new potions professor, over for cards and wine that evening. He tidies away the cards and tumblers after everyone goes to bed, ignoring his grandmother's commentary. "It's like the wreck of Hesperus in here." Bjorn is a transfer from Durmstrang Institute, which is an endless source of fascination for Severus. He lives in the quarters reserved for the defence professor. This is because Severus cannot bear to move again after moving from the dungeons into Albus's bedroom. His dungeon quarters are warm and green and plush, and the floor-to-ceiling windows cut out of the cliff have a jaw-dropping view. His rooms remind him of his old Slytherin dormitory. Comforting. Home. "Magic," he begins to the 7th and 8th years, "is merely a question of concentration and mind power." He stalks around the perimeter of his classroom. "Therefore, I expect your fullest attention on what will be a grueling academic year in preparation for the most exhausting exams you will ever face." Granger is on the edge of her seat. Lovegood appears to be illustrating this moment. Curiously, Draco sits next to Lovegood. "If this level of commitment is beyond you, you are welcome to exit my class." Potter has brought the wrong book, is borrowing a quill, and he is jumpy. It quickly transpires that, try as he might, he just cannot do wordless magic or advanced spells. Within a few short weeks, Severus admits that Potter cannot focus on defence, and something is very wrong with the boy. He grudgingly admits that Potter is trying hard. And so the golden boy does not have it all. By all accounts, Potter is doing well in potions. He is insufferable and doubtless wants to join the Aura office, and so he has finally got his act together in the potions domain. According to his colleagues, Potter is failing charms and transfiguration, but passing herbology. And so, once again, it falls to Severus to teach him in an area in which he is woefully lacking. Potter no longer wastes hours on that broom. This is a good thing, because he has plenty of time for detentions and it gives Slytherin a chance to recoup their rightful Quidditch cup. He hands out detentions for the slightest of infractions and assigns Potter silent defence study sessions while Severus marks endless terrible essays. Although it is beyond Severus's remit to hold his hand through the classwork, it just will not do that the boy who lived again is performing so miserably in his class. At least during these detentions, the youth can study unimpeded by the raucousness of Gryffindor Tower. Potter is at first incensed, and then grateful for this respite, and within time even disturbs Severus's marking to ask questions on defensive doctrine. This doesn't bother Severus, as he loves talking to pupils who are engaged in the subject, and who are not walking disasters. And yet, his magic is still not what it was purported to be. Regardless, students flock to him like moths around a lamp. It's sickening. They can't take their hands off him. He does not take part in the Pottermania staffroom gossip, and he has banned school chatter from the Monday cards and wine night. Christmas comes and goes, and the drunken games night, gossip, and media madness continue. When the dreams start, it must be due to the endless detentions, staff meetings where they wring their hands about psychological support, and the number of daily profit columns allotted to that boy. He decides not to notice Harry in the corridors, but it is like walking past an accident. He cannot stop himself. Chapter 2. Thoughts and Threats. He leaps out of bed, wand in hand. The clock strikes 3. Although he is no longer headmaster, the school still recognises him as such. He still gets the alert when a student is admitted to the infirmary after hours. He casts a disillusionment charm so strong he is invisible, freezes in his nightgown, and considers what to do next. He isn't headmaster. He isn't even deputy headmaster. The flue of the hospital wing doesn't flare green as he steps out, another bonus from the castle. His heart catches in his throat when he sees a student in one of the beds. It's Potter. His hair is a travesty and his mother's eyes are closed. Severus pads over to see shallow and rapid breaths and a wrinkle on his brow. He permits himself to draw nearer, and his fingers brush the tips of the multidirectional hair. Potter's skin is lily white, and dark circles underline his eyes. Severus digs for the pulse in his neck. His skin is chilly. His heart beats in allegro. Not good. Poppy bustles in, with Minerva at her heels. There's a commotion outside the doors, which they lock and silence. Does no one sleep in this school? He is silent as a doe. Is it dark, Poppy? It's the only diagnosis I can arrive at. He is stabilised for now to buy some more time. I wanted to check if we should admit him to St. Mungo's or get Severus's input first. I would have called for him straight away, but...
You should have, Minerva says.
Fetch him directly.
This may be a minor hiccup. Minutes pass as Poppy frantically calls for him in his quarters.
Minerva rests the back of her hand against Potter's forehead and tucks him in tighter. When Poppy returns to the patient's bed, he counters the disillusionment charm and hurries up to them both.
What the devil is Potter embroiled in now?
Minerva jumps. Oh, Severus, I'm so glad you're here. Poppy believes some kind of dark magic has befallen him.
Stand back.
Poppy, please wake his head of hosts.
For many minutes, he twirls his wand and whispers an incantation that sounds almost like a song. Then he sinks into a chair beside the bed and wipes sweat from his forehead. When Septima arrives, she peers at him as though he is a naughty schoolboy.
Well, can you explain what's happened?
Condescending bitch.
He addresses Minerva instead.
I cannot say for certain. I can only guess.
Poppy has fetched a small portrait of Professor Dumbledore, who pipes up.
Then guess, my boy.
Finally, someone with a brain is here.
Albus. He has been tainted by dark magic. It is likely when his magic reached maturity, a dormant contamination manifested itself. He will grow colder.
He clenches his fists.
As I had not been called earlier, there is nothing I can do.
He raises his eyebrows.
Nothing?
Nothing sensible.
Of course. Of bloody course. No expense spared, nothing too much trouble. No person too valuable to shield Potter from harm. And why not? It's not as if he planned to live this long.
Oh, I see, Poppy says.
What on earth is going on?
Minerva asks.
Fine, fine. Why ever not?
Severus gets to his feet.
Right, everyone get out.
I demand to know, Septima begins.
No, you don't. Time is of the essence, woman.
He smiles humorously.
Albus and Poppy will fill you in, I am sure.
When they are alone, he broadens the bed and kneels on the mattress. He summons a knife and bandages and casts a bubble of protective enchantments and locking charms to prevent outside magic from stopping the ritual. No time is wasted. Potter's blood drips hotly down Severus's wrist, the ice of his fingers a ghastly contradiction. He wraps the bandage as tightly as he can around their wounded left palms and secures a knot with the help of his teeth. He fights against the creeping chill as he sings the ancient incantation. Before he succumbs to the cold, his final thought is, "This had better work." Severus wakes and immediately meets the gaze of green almond-shaped eyes. They are very compelling. He jerks back when he realises he is sharing a bed with Potter and, even worse, is holding his hand. Has his life's purpose been reduced to saving Harry Potter?
For Merlin's sake, calm yourself.
Severus fumbles for a moment with their knotted and blooded bandage before summoning his wand. He taps and casts Renéo. Potter hisses in pain as their palms peel apart and their hands start bleeding anew.
It shouldn't be too deep. Hold still.
Severus sings an enchantment and the skin of his palm knits back together. Potter simply stares at him in awe.
There may be a certain amount of scarring, but if you take Dittany, we may avoid even that. Accio essence of Dittany.
It's not until the greenish smoke rising from the Dittany has dissipated that he heals his own hand.
Speak, Potter. I trust you are well. You are not cold.
Yeah. He clears his throat. Fine. A lot better.
What's going on?
Severus stands up and examines the dried blood on his nightshirt. He shrugs his shoulder as though dislodging a fly.
Just a spell. To dissipate some dark magic.
He sneers. Nobody else had wielded enough to be able to help you. He rubs his tingling arm and yawns.
I had the weirdest dream.
Severus stops putting on his slippers to look sharply at him.
It's probably nothing, though. Never mind. What dream?
Potter blushes. Can't remember. Probably something to do with the, blood spell.
Put it far from your mind.
He sees the dawn lighting the sky and adds,
You are not excused from class.
The boy looks so depressed he doesn't have the heart to leave.
Buck up. You're not dead yet.
Potter snorts and smooths his fingers over the scarlet-stained sheet. I keep telling myself it will get better. Will it?
You ask the wrong man, Severus says. I will see you in class. Don't be late.
Potter arrives in his classroom after the final period and studies in silence for an hour. He repeats this every weekday. Severus grows used to the scratchings of quill on parchment and the shuffling of pages. It appears his presence is some kind of study aid. It is most disconcerting. Severus's arm tingles at sporadic intervals. This, too, is most disconcerting.
Grandmother, I have a question about soul marks. Put the lights on. It's like a bloody funeral parlour in here.
He rolls his eyes and lights a few more candles with flicks of his wand.
Good evening to you too, dear, she says. Do you have one at last?
She adjusts her ear trumpet. Severus scowls. A child had an intrusive dream about me. Additionally, my arm has developed an intermittent tingling sensation. I do not seem to have sensory nerve damage.
Have you considered the differential diagnoses? Peripheral neuropathy? Carpal tunnel? Cubital tunnel? Tennis elbow?
Now I know you're mocking me. Apologies. You never talk to me. She sniffs.
He cannot be a child because only those of magical maturity can be your soulmate. Is he the voice of your subconscious?
Severus looks heavenward.
He is just 18. A man, then, of age. Unusual to get one now, but not unheard of. My student. An infernally annoying one at that. Now, that's no way to be speaking about your soulmate, you daft apeth.
He is not my soulmate.
Why, are you not dreaming of him too?
Severus stands up straighter.
I dream of no one. Are you blocking your dreams?
I thought you were supposed to be on my side. You are my kin.
You're being obtuse. Think with your head. She raps on her own skull with her knuckles. There is only one solution. Summon him with a thought message to his arm and bond with him as soon as you can. This is all very exciting. You know, the prince bonding rings should still be in the vault.
Severus goes to draw curtains over her frame.
I heard about the healer's gamble. Very brave for someone who isn't your soulmate.
How did you...
My good friend Dillis told me.
I hate gossips.
She rolls her eyes. You've got a mouth like the Mersey Tunnel. It isn't too late to become what you might have been. First, you ought to wash your hair.
It cannot be borne, and the curtains are closed. There is a knock at the office door. It's gone 8 o'clock.
Enter.
Potter peeks his tousled head into the office. Sir, can I come in for a bit?
You do not normally ask permission.
Potter hovers uncertainly.
In or out, you must choose. You're letting in a draught.
After a few minutes of Potter staring at a textbook and not turning the pages, he pipes up, I came here to say thank you. Severus rolls his eyes. I found out more about the healer's gamble. Thanks for, saving my life. Again. He chuckles weakly. You could have died.
Yet I still stand.
Why was I dying?
You were too young to be the master of the Deathly Hallows. Your magic hadn't matured.
Oh. Severus returns to his marking. Did you save my life because you're in love with my mother? The question comes out of nowhere, and he is unprepared. Before he can reply, Potter continues, "'Cause you don't owe me anything. There was never any debt to repay." The nib of Severus's quill snaps.
I will be the judge of that.
He is infuriating.
Potter, if I thought you'd be so extremely irritating after saving your life, I would seriously have reconsidered doing so.
They continue their work in awkward silence. It is unbearable.
It was not my intent to haunt you with those suppositions. Do not speak of it again.
The boy returns to his textbook. Later, Severus clears his throat. Potter spills ink all over his freshly completed essay.
It is late. You should go.
He takes pity on the boy and siphons off the ink. Thanks, sir. Good night. Sir? Severus looks up from Potions Quarterly. He is underlining questionable deductions of logic. What makes you think I can get this? He holds up, confronting the faceless.
My eternal optimism.
Potter looks dismayed. It seems he is not a natural at bolstering troubled youths.
You need at least and exceeds expectations in all your subjects to get onto the aura training program.
What if Plan A doesn't work out?
No doubt you're aware that there are 25 subsequent letters in the alphabet.
Harry does not seem to compute.
You are famous, so naturally you will get in. If you change your mind, there are other things you can do. Should you need a careers consultation, you ought to meet with your head of house.
Vector? He says uncertainly. I don't know. Privately, Severus agrees.
Professor Vector, he corrects. You have so many open doors to you, I refuse to listen to your pointless whining. Self-discipline is the number one trait in accomplishing goals.
I'm trying. I really am. Sometimes it's like I'm wading through mud. I just can't concentrate. And my magic. He looks down at his hands. Something's not right. Potter is an engaging young man in subjects he is passionate about. However, he is distractible, looking out of windows when trying to write. There's probably one more thing to try.
Accio Clarity Potion.
He hands a tiny vial to the boy. Take a sip no later than 7:30 in the morning. Wow. Thank you.
Potter packs away his things. Don't abuse it. Speak of it to no one.
He goes back to his journal. What if my magic doesn't recover? Do you think the dark magic affected me?
Possibly.
He won't lie to the boy, but it's not all bad news.
The key to success is action and brain cells. The essential in action is perseverance. You persevere, you are rich and famous. Ergo, you will be successful.
He returns his quill to the inkwell and stands.
Good day to you.
Potter grins at him. It's as simple as that, then, eh? He inclines his head in reply.
As simple as that. Now go to bed. I'm not paid to babysit you.
The boy smiles as he leaves. Chapter 3. Soul and Strength. They're practicing basic dueling after class, and after a notably pathetic shield charm, Severus says,
Your wand is the issue.
What? What do you mean?
Potter examines his wand with his fingers and finds no fault. It's never failed me yet.
Would it kill you to open a text on wand lore?
Potter opens his mouth in argument, and he says, don't answer that, it was rhetorical. He pinches the bridge of his nose and sits down. Then he withdraws his own wand, walnut and unyielding, good for healing, and hands it to the boy.
Here, summon my book.
Potter raises his eyebrows.
Well, don't just stand there.
Accio book. The textbook flies neatly over to Potter.
Good, now banish it with your own wand.
Depulso book. The book twitches, then hovers towards Severus before tumbling to the floor. Severus purses his lips and holds out his palm. Potter returns the wand.
Your wand allegiance. Think on it if that's not too much trouble.
They hear a throat clear.
If I may.
Their heads snap up to a painting.
For Merlin's sake, Albus, what is it now?
He is sharing a portrait of a wizard grimacing in agony. Albus pats the tortured man on the shoulder in sympathy.
Professor Dumbledore!
The boy springs up and looks as though Yule has come 11 months early.
Is it really you? How are you?
Alas, Harry, I am but pigment and oil.
But yes, I am a semblance of me.
He notices Severus's glare.
Ah, perhaps we ought to retire to Professor McGonagall's office for a brief chat about your wand. I would not wish to trespass on Professor Snape's welcome any longer.
Absolutely, sir.
The next day, Potter reports back that Dumbledore suggests he visit Ollivander to procure a new wand.
Absurd. It's quite clear you are the master of the Elder Wand. Why else would your original wand have failed you since the Dark Lord's defeat?
Potter looks discomforted.
Wands don't just fail to work unless its allegiance has changed.
Oh, right. I suppose that makes sense. Why shouldn't I get a new wand, though?
Severus looks up at the clock. It's nearly dinner time. We shall retrieve the Elder Wand after curfew.
But Professor Dumbledore is worried you will be killed for the wand one day, yes. Like it or not, there will always be a target on your head. It is your wand, and there may be none in Ollivander's that'll work for you.
Yours works well for me.
Severus's lip curls. Giving you my wand would be like giving you my right arm.
Sorry, that's not what I meant. I'm just worried it's a bad idea.
You are a wizard without a functioning wand, Potter. Short of fleeing to the Muggle world, you don't have many ways forward. It is imperative that you tell no one. No doubt you can persuade it to look like your wand of holly.
You wouldn't tell anyone?
No.
The boy appears to trust him and later joins him at the great oak doors. They crunch through the frost in companionable silence. Their breaths fog in front of them, and soon his toes are freezing. When they reach the white tomb at the shores of the lake by the light of Severus's wand, Potter stops him with a hand on his arm.
I didn't put it back in the tomb. I just told everyone I did. It's actually buried a few feet away.
That was wise.
Severus uses a ploughing spell, and they recover the wand wrapped in a scarf. Potter takes the handle. He raises it above his head and brings it swishing down through the cold night air. A stream of red and gold sparks shoot from the end like a firework. They light up his face, and he is buoyant with joy. The sparks melt some of the frost at his feet.
Better?
Yes, much better.
Now, transfigure and bury your old wand, quickly.
Severus keeps watch, and they return to the castle. Before they part by the front doors, Severus says,
ensure you don't do anything foolish,
in lieu of a goodbye. When he is back in his quarters, he changes into his nightshirt, pours himself a drink, and sits by the fire. Gran pipes up.
It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. The eye is a useless organ.
What?
You know what. You stay in prison when the door is wide open. So don't come crying to me when it doesn't work out.
She spits out a cherry stone into her palm and adds it to the growing pile in her bowl.
Severus scrubs his face.
It is too late for riddles. Speak your mind.
Do you know what your mother's worst mistake was?
Having me.
Not marrying her soulmate. See that you don't repeat her error.
He says nothing and simply glares at her.
Eventually, he says, I am not discussing my love life with my grandmother.
What love life?
He goes to bed.
With a proper wand, Potter is formidable. He continues to stay after class for his defence study sessions, but he hardly needs them. Severus cautions him to play it down for classes if he values his life, and to duel absolutely no one. His spells are powerful. Too powerful. Instead, in some strange twist, Severus now instructs him on reducing the efficacy of his spells. They practice disarming each other without injury, summoning books at a speed lower than a freight train, and casting Lumos in a way that won't cause permanent visual impairment to the poor souls in the vicinity. On a Tuesday morning in March, Severus is teaching the 7th and 8th years as normal. He stalks the perimeter of the room, helpfully reminding those who still cannot cast non-verbally that their NEWTs are just 7 short weeks away. Suddenly, a pressing darkness mutes the entire classroom. The ladies shriek and there are muffled grunts of confusion. Before he can react, warm hands are on his face, caressing his hair, and so quickly he may have imagined it, soft lips press against his. He grasps a wrist and they pull away. They smell like amortentia.
Order! He roars. Silence!
The room stills. At least he still has some measure of control in a classroom. His voice drops to a whisper.
Peruvian instant darkness powder is contraband. The responsible party will live to regret this disruption. You will all return to your seat and sit in silence until the bell, whether the effect dissipates or not.
He hears the scraping of chairs.
Furthermore, the entire class will receive nightly detention till the guilty party confesses. I require 2 rolls of parchment on what defensive actions you would consider taking and why, should instant darkness powder be used against you during a duel.
He hears stifled groans and raises his voice.
By Friday.
He smiles nastily, though no one can see. This is in addition to the essay due that day on comprehensive reactions to dark creatures in a combat environment. He sends the entire class to Filch for detentions every weeknight. It is very satisfying. That Saturday, Severus is wearing a fitted black suit and a white shirt. He emerges from the dungeons with his briefcase and heads to the front door. Potter is loitering yet again.
Where are you going?
Newcastle.
Oh.
He looks baffled. Severus sighs. I'm going to introduce the wizarding world to a very confused Muggle family.
Oh. You look...
stupid? Hideous?
Convincing.
Potter smiles at him. You'd have made a very sharp Muggle spy. Severus nods and pushes open one of the great oak doors.
Listen, can I speak to you after you get back?
Potter asks.
I am very busy. It will have to wait until after school on Monday.
But we leave for the Easter holidays tomorrow night.
Severus sighs again.
Very well. I will be in my office after dinner.
He rather enjoys meeting the Muggle families. Seeing the delight and shock on their faces when he performs magic in their living room and confirms that they are extraordinary children. Describing the castle turrets, the school rules and wonders of Diagon Alley reminds him of the captive audience he had with Lily all those years ago. For once, Potter is far from his mind by the time he apparates back to the gates. He rubs his tingling arm and contemplates calling a house elf for some dinner leftovers. When he reaches his corridor in the dungeons, he sees Potter sitting on the floor reading a book. A familiar scrap of blank parchment lays next to him. His arm tingles again. His occlumency must be slipping. They head into his office without a word, and Severus sits at the grand oak desk. He feels out of sorts in his Muggle clothing. Potter says nothing as he unpacks the canuts, sickles, galleons, a lunoscope, the legislative guide to the proper use of magic, spare copies of the equipment and book lists for first years, a bag of Ilop's owl treats, 2 chocolate frogs, an Albus Dumbledore chocolate frog card, pepper-up potion, and train tickets for the Hogwarts Express.
I'm just going to come out and say it.
Good.
He transfigures his briefcase back into an empty inkwell.
Still Potter says nothing.
Sit.
The boy remains standing and fiddles with the sleeve of his robe. Thank you for helping me with the wand and letting me study and practice here. Severus peers at him suspiciously.
I appreciate it.
Don't make me regret it. Are you here to confess to the darkness powder?
Well, that depends. Would you kill me?
Possibly. I have been accused of many things, and child molester is not one of them.
If that will be all?
No. There's no easy way to say this, but... He finally sits down and stares at the pepperette potion standing on the desk between them.
I know we're soulmates.
Rubbish. Put it far from your mind. He puts the coins into a pouch and the equipment list and train tickets into a folder.
I said, Severus interjects, to put it far from your mind.
He banishes the rest of the items to his desk drawer and picks up a pile of lesson plans.
Good day.
He comes back again the next day. Of course he does. However, it's a Sunday, and so Severus is in his rooms when he is alerted that someone is at his office door.
What?
Can I speak to you? In your office? Draco walks by and smirks at them both. This drives Severus into the office. He slams the door behind them and they take their seats.
What is it now?
This nonsense has got to stop. Say you were my soulmate. For Merlin's sake! Are you happier when I'm not here?
I refuse to engage in this conversation.
Just give me a good reason why you don't think we're...
You saved my life once. I owe you nothing.
Just one reason. I know you're my soulmate. Severus smiles nastily.
You are mistaken. I have no soulmate.
Are you sure? Don't you get these weird dreams? Severus stands up abruptly. If you are disturbed at night, might I suggest the hospital wing?
Prove it. I won't leave until you prove it.
He huffs out a near hysterical laugh.
Right. I see. What the Chosen One wants, the Chosen One gets.
Baring his teeth, he unbuttons his left wrist, savagely and slowly due to his fumbling fingers. He exposes his dark mark.
You see? The most trusted servants of the Dark Lord do not have soulmates.
The boy comes around to his side of the desk. Severus freezes when he has the audacity to reach out a finger. He comes to his senses and pulls his arm away.
It's faded, but I suppose you wouldn't really be able to see.
Potter says,
Are you sure it is? Are you sure Death Eaters don't have soulmates? Isn't it just hidden? I heard Malfoy's parents... Fortuitously, I reached adulthood with no communication from anyone. I am a half-blood, so it was not a given. Thus, I was at no disadvantage in that regard when I was marked. If that will be all?
What happens when you got a soulmate? Do you get married?
Why don't you ask Ms. Encyclopedia? I'm sure she'll swallow a book on the subject if you inquire politely.
What if you were?
I am not.
If you were?
Fortunately, one is not obliged to be with one's soulmate. Soulmate magic is a branch related to divination. One may reject it like prophecy. You can look on it as a cruel joke.
He smiles humorously, drags out a random text from his bookshelf and thumbs through the index. Potter hasn't moved.
It will not disturb my sensibilities should you wed a Weasley. You owe me nothing whatsoever.
His arm tingles. Gritting his teeth, he slaps the book shut.
Stop that! Stop that at once!
He stalks over to Harry, who is unflinching.
Why must you taunt me?
What if I preferred to be with you? He opens his mouth to crack at him again, but the boy looks dejected. Pity seeps in like water trickling into a sailboat. Severus rubs his forearm.
You are very young. Were she not already dead, your mother would kill me. You do not know what you want in life, and when you do identify it, it certainly won't be your defence, Master.
Potter has got to see reason, and soon.
So, when you become an adult, how do you find your soulmate? What if your soulmate was much younger?
Silence! I've had it up to here with your inane questions. Now get out of my sight.
Do you want me to go?
Yes. His voice drops to a whisper.
Now.
After the boy flees,
Severus sags back against his desk. He hopes after the Easter holidays that he will not see much of Potter. Their teacher-student relationship has left the realm of propriety. As he has coddled the boy too much, Severus sends him a note to end the daily detentions. For the rest of that Sunday, he does not leave his quarters for meals. He is not running away. He is just taking precautions. Chapter 4. Restlessness before reprieve. The first day the children are back, Potter once again goes to his office. And once again, it is a Sunday night and it is his day off. It was so weird not to see you at Easter. Potter is already sitting in the visitor's seat and seems to be reading a Transfiguration textbook. You'll never guess. Phineas Nigellus said I ought to have been in Slytherin. How strange would that have been? Professor Black, he corrects. That would have been disturbing. He doesn't know on what grounds he can ask Potter to leave. No one has ever shown up at his office on a Sunday before. Listen, before the holidays, I didn't mean to upset you. Though you were really rude. Potter rubs the back of his neck. Severus cannot believe the audacity, and before he can berate him, the boy continues, I spoke to Draco about his parents. Of course he did. And what of it? They're soulmates. 100%. Yes, yes, this is all very moving. Yet they are. His dad could communicate with his mum, but not the other way round, because she doesn't have a tattoo in the way. A tattoo in the way? He does not like the strangled sound his voice is making. Yeah, but it wasn't like they're magically no longer soulmates anymore. They just have communication issues. But I reckon that since normal couples don't have the magical, message thingy, it's no loss, really.
No loss. Severus shakes his head. You should run along back to your girlfriend.
Potter folds his arms. We broke up. Because I have a soulmate. Of course they did. Your love life is of no consequence to me. Right. Fine. The Burke messes up his hair even more. Well, good night then. Potter approaches him before the start of the lesson whilst everybody is still thundering in. Sir? He shifts his weight from leg to leg. Severus raises his eyebrows. I'm applying to a few unis. I was hoping I could put you down as one of my referees. Lovegood butts in to say, I don't think the Wizarding University of London is a wise choice, Harry. Everybody looks at her. It's a front. I thought everyone knew. The Department of Mysteries uses the students as test subjects in mind control experiments. Daddy did an exclusive article with the widow of Bartholomew Stump.
There will be time for gossip after class.
Severus massages his temples. Take your seats. Now. They crowd towards their desks. He writes today's incantations on the blackboard before turning to say, Potter, I will fill in your forms. Luckily for you, it's part of my job description. Various reference requests arrive by owl, and they're all pointless. It's Potter. He'll get into anywhere he applies. The 2nd of May is upon them, and by curfew, Severus is tipsy. Thank Merlin it's fallen on a Sunday, and Minerva had some foresight not to assign him tonight's rounds. He sits by the fire in a black mood. By the time there's a knock at the door, he has already drunk most of a bottle of red wine. It's midnight. He opens the door and no one is there. Then the messy head of Potter appears from under that blasted cloak. Like the quintessential Gryffindor he is, he barrels in with nary a concern to the consequences. You never think. Severus does not know what he is saying. He has the wherewithal to check that his grandmother's portrait curtains are closed. I'm sorry to just barge in, but... On closer inspection, he can see that Potter is close to tears. You should not be in here. Your head of house would be more appropriate. She wasn't there. He hugs his arms. She wouldn't understand. I wasn't there. I was in St. Mungo's, thanks to you. He receives a dirty look. He deserves it. Potter flumps into an armchair beside the fireplace and wraps his arms around his legs. Sometimes I think, if I didn't love anyone, then I wouldn't have anything to lose.
This remark, coming from Potter's lips of all people, is untenable. He mumbles into his knees, I can't sleep. Talk potions to me or something. I am not your potions master. They both know that this is a feeble excuse. Severus sits on the sofa and tops up his wine glass. Fuck it. The magical signatures arising from several analytical brews and logical fallacies to consider before one starts on isolating new components, he begins. Harry snuggles into the wing of his chair and shuts his eyes. Firstly, the differences may contain more than one component, element, or technique. It is vital that one understands a result can arise from two or more components. He knows that he is overpronouncing his consonants and grips his glass harder so he isn't tempted to wave his hands as he speaks. The second limitation is that it is susceptible to the synergies between the variable of interest and the factor that is varied to create the difference. Fortunately, when two factors influence the same component, they are likely to interact multiplicatively. For example, the amplitude of the effect may be 20% greater for one ingredient over the other, leading to a larger absolute difference in the amplitude of the signature. His voice quietens as he watches the boy's face relax. Of course, the interactions could take a more complex form that would lead to unexpected results. This could be particularly regrettable if one were experimenting with especially volatile substrates. We work on the theoretical view that one has taken steps to reduce the magical noise within the environment. It is a big assumption indeed to assume that there are no magical instruments in the vicinity, no self-cleaning cauldrons, and no house elves. Of course, that is why it is best to be in an underground laboratory when deconstructing such potions. Potter's glasses are slipping off his nose. It also bears mentioning that the signal-to-noise ratio of a difference in effect will be lower than the original comparisons. Specifically, if the original signatures have similar noise levels, then the noise in the difference wave will be greater by a factor of the square root of 2. So, approximately 40% larger. Potter's breathing levels out. Of course, you would know all this had you paid attention in class. His breathing does not change. Asleep at last. He approaches the youth who is inexplicably in his private quarters. He hasn't had any teacher training on what to do in this situation. Had you not persisted in being so infernally annoying, he murmurs, stroking the very tips of Potter's hair. Captain's log, day 229, 12:30 hours, and the boy still visits. He really shouldn't touch the boy. Wingardium Leviosa. He lowers a blanket over Potter's shoulders and feeds the fire with a wave of his wand before retiring to bed. He has a sleepless night. In the morning, Potter is gone. The NEWTs are over, and there is now no excuse for Potter to visit. I've decided what to do with my life, sir. He throws his bag on the floor and huffs a laugh. Well, the next part of my life. I've been accepted onto a defence master at the Wisdom University of London. London? London is far away. I see. Thanks to you. They said you wrote me a great reference. Term starts on the 4th of October. I've got a flat just off Diagon Alley. Naturally, they would accept you into any course you apply for. But I can see that further studies in defence shall suit you well. The boy grins and grows several inches. It was scarcely even a compliment for Merlin's sake. It will be hard work. A mastery is not a life of parties and merriment. Harry's smile is undimmed. And, of course, you must wield your magic with the utmost of discretion. Who is your supervisor? Professor Coppins. Do you know him? We met. Apparently he won the Provost Education Award. Would it be all right if I wrote to you sometimes for advice on things? About defence, seeing as you're my defence master. Possibly about defence, if time permits. The nib of his quill snaps. Damn it. Damn it all. I would like that. The following day, once Granger and Draco finish the graduation address at the leaving feast, the prefects, the seventh-year head boy and girl, and the teachers file down to the lake. It is a curious mix of emotions seeing this group of students graduate, three to a boat.
not one to break tradition, Potter has violated the rules laid down for his own safety. He is crammed in with Granger, Boy Weasley, Girl Weasley, and a hideous cat. He has had a lot of strain with this year group, what with Longbottom's uprising, nearly dying for Potter, and the annual life-threatening antics the Golden Trio got up to. He has lost one of his own, Crab, and regained the respect of his pupils and the friendship of his colleagues. It is highly unlikely he will see these young adults again. After he has packed the Cokeworth, he sits with his grandmother by the fire. The classical music hour has come to an end on the Wizarding Wireless Network, and someone is now wailing about love. He switches it off and ambles over to the gramophone. Music can transport him away from his cauldron of swirling thoughts of unease. "Be a dear and put on one of my old records," his grandmother requests. "They're packed." "Summon them, then. Only if you'll shut up." When she recognises the opening bars of Loch Lomond, she says, "Well, this is cheerful. He's not dead, you know." "I thought you said you'd shut up." "I said no such thing," she sniffs.
"'Twas then that we parted in yon shady glen, on the steep, steep side of the Norman, where in purple hue the highland hills we view, and the moon rises high in the dawn. You take the high road, and I'll take the low road, and I'll be in Scotland before ye. But never more, meet again on the bonny banks of Loch Lomond."
When it comes to an end, she says, "Put on something nice. Try Rachmaninoff." He huffs over to his trunk to find something suitable. "So, I've been sorting out your life." She pulls out tarot cards from her sleeve. "What?" "Listen. The Hanged Man reversed." She slaps the card on the arm of the chair. "You've been an idiot. The time has come to move on from your backward way of thinking." She pulls out another. "The Hierophant. You're conforming. A committed teacher. Very commendable." It joins the first card. Severus raises his eyebrows. "Finally, Temperance." She gives him a triumphant look. "Somehow, if you continue on your path, and you are balanced and stabilised, harmony is in your future." Severus is speechless. "You ought not to listen to a word Sybil says. She thinks you're going to kill yourself and return as a majestic-looking ghost." "It is tempting, I'll admit, if nothing more than to shut you up." She adjusts her ear trumpet. "Speak up, my lad." "I said good night." Now that there's peace at long last, he drags his armchair over to his floor-to-ceiling windows, kicks off his dragonhide boots, and tugs open the curtain. When it's a clear night, he can see the moonlight shimmering on the lake out the back of the castle. When there's mist, it's almost as though he is looking at a perfectly brewed draught of peace. Puffing on his wizarding cigarette, he sighs around the purple smoke. Tonight, he can only see raindrops hammering on the dark glass. Chapter 5. Correspondence and Cooperation. 20th of November 1999. Dear Professor Snape, I'm really enjoying my studies. I wanted to ask you about the research Professor Jennings did on transfiguration analysis in defence. My supervisor said you wrote an article on it years ago, but I couldn't find it in our library. If it's not too much trouble, it would be great if you could send me a copy. It's nice to have my own space. I'm renting a flat with my ex. We're really good friends, because she's always away at Quidditch and needs a base. I'm not sure I'd like living totally alone, especially after Hogwarts. Hope you like my new owl. You might need to let him have a nap. His name is Somnus. He likes pumpkin juice. I know what you're thinking. I can almost hear you saying, I'm not an owl sanctuary. But you won't have much choice because he is such a sleepy owl. Anyway, I hope things are okay at school. I miss Hogwarts a lot. Yours sincerely, Harry Potter. 10th of December 1999. Potter.
This note was delayed in order to provide your bird ample opportunity for comprehensive recuperation. If only we could all be so lucky. There is no use in owning a post owl that can barely get to Scotland. S.S. 23rd of December, 1999. Hi, sir. Thanks for spoiling, ruining, taking care of Somnus. He's a lot fatter and has turned his beak up at his usual treats. I've looked over the papers you sent. Thanks. But some of it contradicts the conference I went to last month in Amsterdam. Professor Ahmed was speaking about power differentials and object transformation and how it wouldn't matter if the objects you used had been transfigured with elemental magic. Perhaps I didn't understand her accent or I've just missed the point. Anyway, I've enclosed a copy of the speaker's abstracts from EDAM, the Euro Defence Annual Meeting, in case you were interested. Don't laugh too hard, but I had no idea there was so much to it. Harry. P.S. Happy Christmas. P.P.S. Make sure you get some time off for once and don't work too hard. 19th of January, 2000. Dear Mr. Potter, congratulations on surviving Amsterdam. Not everyone manages it. You need not concern yourself with me. I have been autonomously taking care of myself since before you were conceived. You may have noticed that I am quite proficient at this. You should, however, worry about the Gryffindor team who are being utterly slaughtered. Professor Ahmed is partially correct. Be aware of caveats when speakers claim such sweeping statements. Editors of all journals, and indeed conference committees, are nowadays looking for easy bites, snazzy titles, extra points for puns and colons and question marks and other such uninformative nonsense, anything to increase their readership. They are all sellouts. With that in mind, when the time comes, you ought to consider publishing your work under an alias. Your academic contributions should stand in its own right. Regards, S.S. 2nd of April, 2000. Hi, how's school? Slytherin won anything yet? Who's writing to you? Aurora cuts in. You don't usually smile at your post. He pushes the letter into his pocket, partially unread. No one of consequence. Severus is painfully aware that he lives for these letters. There has been no news of Harry in the papers for months, but he ought not to encourage the boy further. He scratches Somnus on the head and refills his pumpkin juice for him. That owl looks shattered. Is it yours? No, Severus says. He gathers the rinds of his bacon into his palm for Somnus to nibble. You've done very well, he murmurs. Very well indeed. Severus is at breakfast one morning, chewing slowly through the pain, when Aurora leans across Septima to speak with him. Read this. I don't think you'll like it. She stuffs the prophet into his hand. He raises his eyebrows at a notably bad photograph, even for him, taken from his trial last year. His gaze is drawn to the headline, Concerns for Mental State of the Chosen One. He drops his fork. When he skims it, certain phrases jump out at him. My mentor and friend, Professor Snape, deserves the highest level of respect. Snape suspiciously exonerated. There are rumours Potter is under the Imperius curse. The Prophet staff are deeply concerned. The results from a random poll of members of the public suggest that the majority believe he may benefit from a prolonged stay at St. Mungo's. I haven't seen my good friend Harry at any parties, so yes, I am very worried about him, states anxious friend Tony Goldstein. He looks up and folds the paper. Thank you for notifying me. I do have a reputation to uphold, of course. The last thing you need is to lose respect from the children, Septima says. I'm not overly concerned, he says with a smirk. Some tiny second years are staring up at him from the Slytherin table in awe, as Septima piles scrambled eggs onto his plate. Stop mothering me. 2 galleon Slytherin win on Saturday. 20th of May, 2000. Hi, I'm enclosing a job advert I saw in Quarterly Defence News. I think you'd like it here. Everyone is very bookish. No offence. Harry. P.S. Do you want to look around? My flu address is 37B Winchester Walk. You can come by any time. 6th of July, 2000. Hello,
Somnus came back without a reply and I wanted to check you got my last letters. Also, I've just moved house and my new address is 12 Thames View. I presume you're not dead. It would have made the news. I've got my godson every other week, so I've dropped my course to part-time. You said before not to tell anyone about the clarity potion. Is it illegal? Let me know before I ask the apothecary. It will be a poor start to get arrested now I've got a baby, ha-ha. Harry. 15th of August, 2000. Dear Mr. Potter, whilst not unlawful per se, it is only obtainable via St. Mungo's and isn't commercially available. The casual potioner ought not to brew it at home. I enclose another bottle. Be cautious. S.S. Thanks. 5th of October, 2000. Dear Professor Snape, I normally write to you in the peace of the WL library or the noise of the cafe, but guess what? I'm now doing it between naps. Ted is a boisterous 2-year-old and is driving me up the wall. Did you know Metamorphmagi can give themselves a monkey's tail? I'm now seriously considering removing the banisters in the name of child safety. Isn't it crazy that there isn't a primary school for magical children? Did you go to school with Mum? Or did you have to learn spelling at home? Is that why your handwriting is so bad? For once, I'm glad I'm not there with you, because you'd hex me if I said that to your face. In fact, you can scrap all of the above as the ramblings of a tired person who is losing his mind, if he hasn't lost it already. Harry. 20th of October, 2000. Potter. You are searching for sympathy in the wrong place. You know full well I voluntarily surround myself with hormonal children, in a boarding school of all places, where I cannot get away. Count your blessings you won't have to do the contraceptive potion talk. Leave that to his head of house. Nor are you genetically responsible for him, as he is not your true spawn. If all else fails, look on the bright side. You get to return him every week. I did not attend a primary school. I did, however, learn Latin. So do not pity me. Be assured that I had a wonderful time. S.